Welcome to Wednesday here at Crane & Company. Thank you so much for joining us. To my left, former Michigan quarterback David Cohn. To my right.
Give me a compliment.
Flexing and bursting at the seams in a good way. Yeah. Former Western State Colorado wide receiver Blaine Crane and also my brother. Got a fantastic show for you today. Even though we aren't live, it's jam-packed because we're going to tell you how to bet the Super Bowl, who's overrated and underrated in the AP Top 10 in college basketball, and we got some trivia. It's going to blow your mind about SEC football.
Also, Canada can get out of here.
Yeah, and there's a lawn that somebody needs to get off of, eh? And it's David Cohn's. That and more on Crane & Company. We are only weeks away from Selection Sunday. We have the AP polls out. We're starting to see a little bit of separation at the top, but college basketball is turning into its best form as we're past halfway in most conference seasons. And we're going to play a little game of overrated, underrated with some of the top teams in the country. David Cohn.
Yes, sir.
You have that new AP Top 10.
I do.
Let's talk about it a little bit. You know how much I love college basketball.
Look, I want people to be prepared when they're filling out their March Madness brackets this year. Can you help them do that?
I am here.
All right.
Trust me. Believe me. Want me.
Current AP Top 10. Let's break it down here. We're going to start place close to home for you boys. The Auburn Tigers sitting at number one, 20-1, only loss right now to Duke at Cameron Indoor. Overrated, underrated?
You know, I think it's hard for me to say underrated being at number one. I think that they're rated perfectly right now for what they've done. This Auburn team to me looks different than even some of Bruce Pearl's best teams. I mean, they're put together a little bit differently than 2019 with Bryce Brown and Jared Harper. The guards are bigger. They're longer defensively. I think they're more effective. You know, it's hard to sit here and say the offense isn't as good as what it was in 2019. I know toward the end of the year and then into the tournament, the offense was absolutely scorching for Auburn. But right now, they've got one of the top offenses in the history of KenPom. So I think this is the best team that Bruce Pearl's had. You look at Jani Broome, has a good chance to be National Player of the Year. Cooper Flagg's in that running with him. But I think the depth. But make no mistake, and this is a compliment to Bruce Pearl and what he's built at Auburn and Stephen Pearl and the Chad Pruitt and Burgo and that coaching staff. What matters in March is what really matters now. So all the stuff being number one is great. Auburn fans are super excited, but there's big expectations for this team. And the way they're built, man, they're a machine. And it's, you know, typically I'm very nervous for Auburn games. This is one of the few times where I watch a game and think, hey, how are we going to win this game? Not how are we going to lose it like I do every football season, it seems.
Is this team built to go the distance?
Yeah, they are because of the length and depth that they have. I think a big piece and a guy that can take them there, but he needs to keep logging great minutes. That's Tahad Pettiford.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a freshman, obviously coming in. The kid's an absolute star, but he really moves this team when it comes to tempo wise. Like, we talk about Jani Broome all we want. I mean, one of the best players in college basketball. But Auburn's at their best when Tahad Pettiford's in the basketball game. And if he keeps moving the way he's moving, not only from a scoring standpoint, but just running an offense standpoint, Auburn's going to be hard to beat.
I like them bringing him off the bench, though, because defensively he's still trying to figure it out. And even though, you know, Denver Jones I don't think is a true point guard, his defense is so good. Talking about Denver's, I think you get it's a nice change up. It's like having – it reminds me kind of a little bit with the Lions, David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. You've got two different kind of guys in there that can give you two different things. So I like the rotation the way it is right now.
All right, next up, the Duke Blue Devils 11-0 in the ACC. Their only loss is to Kentucky and to number one Kansas, at that time number one Kansas, and that one was by three. You buying these guys or selling these guys?
Oh, I'm buying them, and for a couple reasons. I know that people will look at the ACC and say, oh my God, the ACC is so down this year in basketball. They've had some coaches retire here recently. I don't think this is going to be the new norm for the ACC, but everybody with this Duke team talks about Cooper Flagg. And I get it. He's incredible. John Shire said he's never coached anybody like him. I mean, the kid just turned 18 years old. You know, outside of some international player, I think he's the best draft prospect. But that's not just who Duke is. I think sometimes it gets lost in translation of who Duke is. They're the tallest team in college basketball right now. They're incredibly long at every position. You look at Malawach and some of the other guys that they have a good blend of experience and youth that is kind of growing together. And as long as they keep progressing at the rate they are, Cooper Flagg is able to stay healthy. You look around this team, I mean, Connor Knipple's a hell of a player too. He kind of gets lost in a little bit of the talk. So this Duke team, I think, is only going to get better, and they may be playing their best ball at the end of the year, which right now, them, and I know we're going to get to Alabama next, those are the two teams I'm looking at as an Auburn fan that really worry me the most.
I mean, Duke has a superstar every year, period.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes those superstars lead Duke to national championships. Sometimes, like Zion Williamson's year, not so much. Is Cooper Flagg the type of guy who can lead Duke to a national championship?
Absolutely. And the reason why, one, Cooper Flagg's an absolutely phenomenal basketball player, but Duke's a really good defensive basketball team. Yeah. Right now, they're ranked fourth in the nation, giving up only 59 points a basketball game, which is extremely hard to do from an efficiency standpoint. On defense, they're top three in the nation. That's what it'll carry. You have to have the pieces, those pieces that can get you over the top, but also the foundation of being able to play defense. That's another reason why these teams, top two, you see Auburn and Duke, as good as Jahni Broome is, as good as Cooper Flagg is, they both play phenomenal defense. And that's what matters when the ball's not going in
for sure.
Every time you get on the court, because it's not going to.
Number three, Alabama, 19-3 overall, 8-1 in the SEC. Their only conference loss was to Ole Miss. Overrated or underrated right now, given what's going on at the point guard position, sitting Sears sometimes, but he's also leading the conference in scoring?
Yeah. I actually think, from a ceiling standpoint, Alabama is incredibly dangerous, almost to the point of, on a neutral floor, I would take Alabama over Duke. I would. And it's for that, not just for Mark Sears. It's not just that Aiden Holloway has seemed to figure it out. It's not just that Chris Youngblood, who transferred in, a Tuscaloosa native, is starting to find his three. It's this team is starting to find physicality. You know, Cliff Omiyori is starting to look like what we thought he was going to look like coming into the year, protecting the rim, giving them a little bit on offense. You look at Grant Nelson, his ability to drive the ball, to get to the foul line. You know, we talk about length. While the guards can worry you because they're not huge, right? Filon's a freshman, kind of regressed a little bit the last couple weeks. SEC play will do that to you, especially when it's the best year in the league. But when I look at the style that Alabama plays, and you mix that with the capability to play good defense, you mix that with the capability to win low-scoring games if they have to, even though they don't play in a lot of them. And I think that's kind of been the weak spot or the soft underbelly of this Alabama team. And I think Nate Oates, from a culture standpoint, when you're able to sit your best player because you don't think he's given good enough effort on defense or rebounding, and the team doesn't fold, and he responds, and Mark Sears always responds, I think that shows you that this Alabama team, you know, they're not just one guy, they're not a bunch of front runners, and they're incredibly dangerous. They really, really are.
Seems like Nate Oates sitting Mark Sears was more of a pre-tournament thing. Hey, let's make sure that the culture's right and all that. But once tournament time starts, he's averaging over 18 points, old, experienced guards. That's what wins in March.
Mark Sears is going to be on the court when the pressure is at its highest, I promise you. A lot of people call him Nate Oates. A lot of people call him Nate Goats, especially Darby Lou. She says that to me every time I see her. But the thing about Alabama, and Jake, you brought this up, they know exactly who they are.
Yeah.
All right, they want to spread you out, and they want to shoot threes. It's hard to lose basketball games when you're scoring 90 points a game.
Yeah.
And right now, Alabama leads the nation in points per game with 90.8. And another thing that doesn't get talked about enough, as flashy as Alabama is, they will out-rebound you. They rank right now fourth in the nation in rebounds.
Yeah, well, Diabate's been a great add, too.
Yeah.
You know, coming up, I believe he's from Brooklyn, somewhere up there. He's kind of their trash guy. But when you play the way Alabama plays and you try and shoot short twos or three-pointers, a lot of times when you take that many three-pointers, what does that lead to?
Long
rebounds. And I think that's why Alabama's offensive rebounding, now you add in Cliff Omiyori, right, and Grant Nelson, who can go mix it up, and Diabate that can fill it up in there. And I haven't even talked about Aiden Sherrill. Or Reed, if Jarris Stevenson starts figuring it out from the three-point line, Alabama's, I mean, they're a Freddy Krueger nightmare.
I think Nate Oates might be the best in the nation from recruiting to his style
system.
Of play.
Yeah.
Right.
I would put him and Bruce Pearl right there, man.
I agree.
Remember, we saw him in person last year, Sweet 16. They beat North Carolina. That was a heck of a tournament to be at. Number four, Tennessee, 18-4. Zakai Ziegler, a little bit banged up, had injury history. Overrated or underrated right now for Rick Barnes' squad?
I'm going to say at number four, it's a little overrated to me. And I actually think a lot of Tennessee fans will agree with me here. Now, there's been absolute carnage with this thing coming out. You look at Houston lost. Florida lost to Tennessee by 20 after beating them by 30. Iowa State, what's happened to them? Michigan State loses at USC. But when I look at this Tennessee team, it still feels like this is the same movie that we've seen pretty much every year with Tennessee outside of having Dalton Knecht. And I think Dalton Knecht is different than Chaz Lanier because his bag was deeper and he could score in more ways. Chaz Lanier ain't a guy that's going to drive the way Dalton Knecht can drive, right? He's more of a shooter, a pull-up, mid-range, three-pointer, get the kick out when somebody else drives. They're an incredible defensive team. And when the officials let them play and they let them grab and do that, they can beat anybody in the country. But the offense still, to me, I mean, even in the game they beat Florida the other night, they shot 27% from three. Eventually in that tournament, you're going to have to play good offensively. Eventually in that tournament, you're not going to get the whistles you want, and you're going to have to score. At number four, I'm going to say Tennessee a little bit overrated right now.
Well, they're ranked four, so I'm going to give you a fact or fiction. Tennessee will make the final four. Fact or fiction?
Fiction. Fiction. The offense is not good enough. It's just not. And I every time I watch Tennessee play basketball, it's the closest you'll ever get to a Big Ten football game.
Yeah.
It's just a slug it out.
Listen, I said they're Iowa.
14-10. That's how they win. And look, from a defensive standpoint, they're the best in the nation on defense on multiple categories. We could go down it. But sooner or later, you're not going to get the calls, and you're going to have to score some points. Right? They're 131st in the nation in points per game.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That just doesn't sound like a Final Four team to me.
Houston at fifth, 17-4, coming off a one-point loss to Texas Tech. Overrated, underrated?
Mm. I'm going to say underrated, because I think and I know the Texas Tech game, that one hurt. You know, their win against Kansas was crazy. I think they had like a 0.03% chance to win that game in the last 15 seconds. They take it to overtime. They beat them. But Houston is so damn scrappy, and they make tough shots. It's funny. You look at Houston's offensive numbers and like the amount of points they scored a game, you're like, oh, they're not that great on offense. But then you look at the amount of shots that they take and the way that they hustle and their effort. Does not having a true squad of big men, is that going to hurt them in the long run? We'll see. But when I look at this team, if they can continue, if they can get healthy, stay healthy, I think Houston is a problem in the tournament because they can do a lot of things well, and they just, God, they just play their guts out, man. They absolutely play their guts out.
I know we're 21 games into the season, but it still feels like Houston's figuring themselves out on offense. I mean, you're ranked 128th in the nation, but you make 40% of your three.
That's the
difference. You know, so it's kind of, those are two stats that really don't fit together. And Houston, you can put in the same boat as Tennessee when it comes from defensive output. They're one of the best in the nation. So I do think Houston belongs there. I think their offense is going to get better throughout the year as long as Toppin doesn't get thrown out for stupid reasons we talked about the other day. But
he was Texas Tech. Toppin was on Texas Tech. They threw out Texas Tech guy.
Correct. Excuse me. Yeah. But I'm comfortable with Houston being there.
Florida coming in at 6-18-3. Remember, they beat Tennessee by 30 in Gainesville when Tennessee was number one. Then they lost to Tennessee in Knoxville by 20 points. You like Florida at 6?
God, I think they're underrated. They scare me to death because they really have everything if you look at Florida. I mean, Elijah Martin didn't have a great game against Tennessee, hit some shots late. Remember, he's the FAU transfer that helped John L. Davis and those guys get to the Final Four. He's a nightmare. Walter Clayton, I could talk all day about Walter Clayton. He got a little banged up in the Tennessee game. He's an absolute bucket. He's an NBA player. Every time he shoots the ball, I think it's going in. But they have Richard. Then you look down low. You talk about exciting whites. They've got exciting white trees. You look at Condon. You look at Hawk. Hell, they got a freshman that's redshirted and that's 7'9", Oliver Rue. I don't even know if that's a real human being or not. I think Florida, when they, and against Tennessee on the road, that's a tough one. But in a neutral court, they can win in so many different ways that they're scary. They can play fast pace. They can play slow pace. They can play a rock fight. If the shots are going in at guard, and they've got some tough-ass guards too, like they will lock you up and play defense. I think Todd Golden's team is super dangerous. I think they're underrated at 6. I know they just lost to Tennessee, but remember, they did beat them by 30 at home. You put Florida and Tennessee on a neutral court in the NCAA tournament, I'm taking Florida. You put Florida and Houston on a neutral court in the NCAA tournament, I'm taking Florida. I think they're a problem.
Deep run, Final Four maybe for Florida?
Look, this is a team that wouldn't surprise me to win a national championship.
I'm with you, dog.
And I think, one, you have four guys in double digits, which is always a good start. And two, even if you're missing shots, you know what's great? Getting the rebound. And Florida out-rebounds everybody in the nation at the margin of 10-plus. I mean, it's not even close. They're huge. They're huge. They're trees. They can play well. I think it's going to come down to guard play with them.
It is.
Their guards.
They got some good guards.
They're going to have to perform in the biggest moments. If they can do that, Florida has the ingredients and the makeup to get extremely hot during March, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them run all the way.
Purdue at 7, and Matt Painter's had so many good teams over the last few years. This one is 17-5. How good is this team?
I've got to say overrated because I don't try. I think Braden Smith is a witch at point guard offensively. I like Lawyer at guard. He can make some shots. Cockman Wren down low is a really good big. He's a decent player, the lefty that they throw in down there. I don't trust. I mean, Colvin can shoot too. It's defensively with Purdue to me that I worry about them. I watched them play Auburn, and they did beat Bama. I'll give them credit, but I don't think Bama was playing as good as what they're playing now. I just worry when it comes down to if a team has big physical guards that they run into in the NCAA tournament, they can be in trouble. I'm telling you right now, if you see Purdue, if Purdue gets a 3 seed or whatever, and you see them lined up against a 13 seed or whatever, 14 seed, whatever it is, and that 14 seed has some big physical guards, that may be one of my big upset picks. Because look, Cockman Wren's nice. He ain't Edie. There ain't a lot that are, but if you go back and see some of the guards they've had in the past, they've been bigger, they've been more physical. I just don't trust their guards defensively. That's why I'm going to say overrated.
First team on the list from the Big Ten. Are they even the best team in that conference?
The thing about Purdue is I don't feel like they're great at anything, but I don't feel like they're bad at anything. I think they're above average at a lot of things. I don't think they have enough this year. I really don't, especially from a defensive standpoint. Usually you see Purdue, they got a couple guys that can actually shoot the lights out. I think Braden Smith can be that guy, but I don't think they have enough, and you don't have Groot in the paint playing.
Iowa State at number 8, coming off 3 straight losses. Not close losses, Jake. All 3 of these losses to Arizona, Kansas State, and Kansas, all by double digits or more. At 8, you like them there?
I'm going to say underrated, and here's why.
Wow.
Let's not forget, that Arizona loss, Caleb Love hit a 60-footer at the buzzer to tie it to send into overtime. And I'm disappointed. I thought the maturity of this team was going to be better than this. It seemed like they let that Arizona loss affect them against you let Kansas State, who I know is talented but hadn't really done anything all year, come into your house and absolutely trounce you. Going to Kansas and losing, okay, I get it. Kansas's back was a little bit against the wall. They were 6-4 in Big Ten play. But I'm looking at some of these teams. I watched Auburn had to come back from down 16 to beat these guys at the buzzer in Maui. They've got some guys. They're also a little bit beat up. One of their best shooters who had a broken hand is coming back soon. European guy, I think. He's going to kind of add some versatility to their offense. Typically, from a driving standpoint, you know, you look at Curtis Jones. You look at Gilbert. Gilbert's a phenomenal player. I think he's an NBA player. I was very disappointed that Iowa State didn't find a way to get into the gaps against Kansas because that's kind of their game. And they let their offense affect their defense against Kansas a little bit. They've got to eliminate the turnovers. But I'm telling you, when this team gets fully healthy, and with Jefferson and these guys, and they get rolling again, they can be really, really dangerous because T.J. Osselberger is a hell of a coach, and they're physical. I'm going to say underrated at 8 right now. Do not be surprised if they turn it around pretty quickly and shoot back up.
All right, Michigan State's at number 9, the second Big Ten team on the list, but they have a better record than Purdue. Michigan State right now is at 18-3. Overrated, underrated, how would you rank them in the Big Ten right now, too?
Man, I actually think that they're rated pretty much perfectly. I mean, they've went on a big run. Do they have a ton of great, amazing wins at the top? They don't. But you look at Carr, you look at some of the other pieces that they have, they're shooting better than they have in a long time. A lot of people think this is Izzo's best team since 2019, 2020, whenever that was. When I look at Michigan State, though, I'm a little bit worried about the depth. But again, if you're going to shoot at this level, in the game at USC, shout out to our guy, Eric Musselman. That was a big win for them, kind of keeping USC afloat when it comes to the NCAA tournament. We'll see what they do over the next couple weeks. I think this Michigan State team is a quality team. I don't think they're Final Four good. I'll say that.
Last one, number 10, Texas A&M, overrated, underrated.
I love Buzz Williams, man. I love the energy. I call him Diet Bruce Pearl. Because he kind of has that same vibe. I'm going to say overrated. And I don't say that thinking that A&M is a bad team. The shooting scares me. It scares me. I think they're a little bit more watered-down version of what Tennessee is. Not that Wade Taylor can't get hot, but Wade Taylor will also shoot you out of a game. Phelps did a great job when Wade Taylor went down. I mean, hell, he shot 30 shots a game, so he's going to score a lot of points. They're always going to be scrappy. Garcia, you know, on the offensive block, offensive rebounding, they're incredible. They fight their ass off. I just worry about the offensive side of the ball and the shooting for A&M because it ebbs and flows so much. They got hot at the end of last year, but they go through these cold spells. I'm going to say a tad overrated, but congrats to them on being in the top.
Blaine, they're 4th in the SEC right now. Better conference record right now than Florida, Tennessee, even Ole Miss. How you feel about Texas A&M?
I feel like they're a dangerous team. I feel like, well, anytime a Buzz Williams coach team, they're going to give you everything they can, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they're one of the top 15 in the nation, giving up a certain amount of points a game. It's just, do you have the guys on offense? Do you have that one guy that can take you over the top? Not only the one guy, but I guess the two guys. I question their ability to put the ball in the basket consistently. And look, at the end of the day, consistency is going to keep you on the beam. So if you're not at least really good on one side of the ball. I need you to be okay on both. And I'm still waiting for that Texas A&M offense to figure it out.
Without a doubt. Oh, well, I'll tell you what we're not having to figure out. What is the best coffee company in the history of the universe? Because that's our friends over at Black Rifle Coffee. I've told you about their versatility, all right, which we know is one of the top tillies in the world. Whether it's the light roast, the dark roast, everything in between. They even got a coffee quiz you can take on their website, which will match you with a blend perfectly tailored to your specific taste. But the coolest thing they do is a portion of every purchase you make with Black Rifle Coffee goes towards supporting veteran and first responder causes, which means your money goes a long way toward giving back to those who serve our nation. They even got great espresso, and they're roasted right here in the USA by a veteran-led team of expert roasters who take pride in serving coffee and culture to people who love America. So head to blackriflecoffee.com now. Use code DAILYWIRE, all one word, for 20% off America's coffee. That's blackriflecoffee.com. Use code DAILYWIRE for that great discount and help support our veterans and first responders. All right, it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
Somebody was asking for this yesterday in the chat. And they're, look, I don't want to get any spoiler alert here, but I think there's a country north of us that may be hanging around a certain lawn too long. David Cohn, who's G'ing off your L today, eh?
We might let him still be a country after this.
Maybe.
Jake, okay? Canadians booing America need to get off my lawn. Mm. This week, many Canadians uncharacteristically booed the U.S. national anthem during hockey and basketball games in Toronto, Ottawa, Calgary, and some other cities I've never been to. And no, it wasn't because their country hasn't won a Stanley Cup in over 30 years, like you might think, but because our new president is keeping his word and getting things done. Listen up, Canadians. I'm sure you and the rest of the world liked it a lot better when America had a barely functional human being in charge, in the same sort of way that a small child is happy or left alone to eat candy and throw poop on the wall. But that weekend at Bernie's experiment is over, and Daddy's home to make sure you eat your vegetables. And no, you don't have to like it. You can whine and pout and boo-hoo all you want. That's your prerogative. But one day, you're going to grow up big and strong. You're going to graduate college, maybe convince Becky to marry you, and you're going to realize, man, Dad was right all along. I shouldn't have booed him during the Star-Spangled Banner at the Raptors game. And we're going to forgive you, because that's what fathers do. But until you grow up and come to that realization, shut up, finish your broccoli, and get off my lawn.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Canada.
Yes. Here's my thing. Look, I never had a problem with Canada. All right? One of my first roommates in college was a catcher from Canada. Good friend of mine. Great dude. But there's a couple things that you don't do, okay? Especially when you're not American, which I think you may have a choice here soon, and you need to make the right one. You can say what you want about Americans. You cannot like us. You cannot like the food we eat. You cannot like, I don't know, the way we go about things. But you boo our national anthem. I think you just need to remember, you don't want Bama, dog. None of y'all want Bama. You spend more money on, like, gender ideology books than you do on your military. It's almost like the Billy Madison scene when he's asking, he has a banana and he wants the kid's snack pack. And the kid says no. And he just looks at him and he goes, you know how badly I could beat you, right? And we're not, you know, we're not talking about invading Canada by force, but you disrespect us, you watch your mouth, because there ain't enough of you guys on horses and jars of syrup to save you if you really do piss us off. You exist because we let you exist. And don't forget
that. Are they little America now?
Look, they're little 51st America. State,
it
dog.
It must be nice. It just must be nice to put your little head on that pillow and knowing that, you know, we're America's right next to us, so we're protected.
We're
that's,
the fence.
That's the thing.
Isn't that what Daniel Tosh said? We're the fence.
Yeah.
We're your border.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know how quick y'all would come. Let's just say for a second that China was like, you know what? We're going to invade Canada. They'd mop y'all. They would mop y'all. Europe would mop y'all. Hell, I there's some other countries out there. I think Australia would mop y'all at the end of the day. But that'd be a sissy fight for the ages. But what would happen the first second China invaded? You know who y'all call? It ain't the Ghostbusters. It's us. And after you boo our national anthem, I don't know, man. Maybe going up north for some orange or General Tso's chicken really don't sound bad this time of year.
Hey, don't just take my word for it, though. Can we watch some of these clips here of these fans?
Yeah, doing? Good. Please continue to piss me off. Man, what a clip that was. I'm super
unacceptable.
I just...
Unacceptable.
You're lucky I don't care about any of these sports.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Our director, Trey, caught something. He threw it to me right here. And I'm disappointed that I wasn't a part of this, but I'm proud of the Nashvillians out there because apparently they booed the Canadian national anthem during the hockey game last night against the
Sabres. Yeah, hold on. Is all the Canadian flags need to be taken down? Executive Order 99. All Canadian flags out of America, but leave the ketchup chips.
Play that one from Nashville last night.
Oh, Canada, our home and native land.
Good. Yeah. Good.
Now, how does it feel?
Yeah, let's play a game called Whose Military is Better?
We can beat y'all, and y'all are going to pay us more.
Yeah, and you can't win the Stanley Cup. Sucks to suck. At least y'all got Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah, solid.
All right, y'all boys want some reactions?
God, let's react.
Let's do it. First up, waste management clips. It's a very, what's the right word? Interesting week.
American.
Interesting week in golf.
We need feet on the ground at waste management.
We do.
I could be your guy.
We need to talk to
Jared. Correspondent?
Correspondent.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's, well, all right, watch out for this then.
Yeah, play a clip. Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Good.
How hammers the kid?
like, if you don't know, basically the waste management, it's a huge party. It like goes against all the decorum of typically what you get. It's like the one, they like let you get it all out. Like what are those, you see those like rich white chicks that go into the woods and scream and hit the hammers against the ground, like get all their anger.
That's weird.
About the patriarchy out. That's what the waste management is, but in like golf terms.
Is it like The Purge? I never saw those movies. But The Purge, in the concept, like there's one night that you're allowed to do whatever you want, but then everyone's dead the rest of the year.
But you just murder beers.
So instead of like the quality and the gentlemanness of golf coming down in every tournament over the years, you just let waste management happen 1 week and then the rest of the tournament.
You blow the
waste
horn.
Waste management is basically the live tour.
Look at this. Look at one of my buddy's future wives right here. Play this. Watch this. One beer, two beer, down the gutter.
Yes!
Golly.
It's not the Masters.
That's an eligible bachelorette if I've ever seen one.
Augusta, with the fanny pack.
How about that, Canada?
Augusta would never.
Quit playing with the fanny pack.
Yeah. You love to see it. The wasted management. Because that's what it really is.
USA, USA, USA. Canada should take notes.
Yeah. What's up? We beefing
or what? What's the next one?
He's leaning, baby.
Uh-oh.
He already got to start the video. I've been there before.
Yeah, he's got that. He's got that Joaquin Phoenix from the Joker lean going on.
He's got reverse body.
Yeah.
They hadn't even played the clip yet.
Play the clip.
You got a term for this and they hadn't played the clip yet.
Got that Roger Rabbit ass body. Oh, yeah.
Who said that?
Hey, Ma, hey.
Oh,
hey.
No.
Yeah. Look at my guy.
Everything back is in the front and everything front's in the back.
How's he staying up?
How isn't he falling?
Yeah, now it's
what
back.
Do you call that, reverse body?
Yeah, that's not a reverse body. It's like the, you remember those little things off Men in Black?
Yeah.
What are those little things?
They'll have names.
Insects, little bugs.
Yeah.
To run around Men in Black. That's what, like, if you get too hammered, you get reverse body.
Yeah, I mean, look, you'd love to see it.
What's
Wasted
this one?
Management, can't wait.
All right. Next one up here, we have a special graphic. There's no team that's ever won a Super Bowl when they've lost to this guy in a season. Which quarterback do you think it is?
Tom Brady.
No.
Say it again.
Jameis Winston.
You're closer.
Am I
warmer.
Close? All right,
warmer.
So it's an obscure one.
Warmer.
Well, say it again.
He left his team this past year and went to a new home, but he's not the starting quarterback anymore.
And it's not Jameis? God, that was a good guess.
Bring him up. Bring up that graphic.
Kirk.
No team has ever won the Super Bowl in the same season they lost to Kirk Cousins as a starter. Falcons this season, 22. Eagles 21.
Man, that wind's looking a lot better right now, isn't it? That wind's looking a lot better right now.
Khakis Kurt.
Oh, Khakis Kurt going to TJ Maxx and then dicing your ass up.
A walk-in JCPenney commercial.
That's what I'm
saying. Now, he has a no-trade clause. Is he going to leave Atlanta? I mean, Michael Penix Jr. is
the
guy.
We were talking about yesterday with the Myles Garrett trade. Would Kirk waive it to go be the quarterback of the Browns? Because it's a Michael Penix Jr. show now. Like, I mean, do you really want to play or do you want to hold a clipboard and mentor someone?
I think he...
If he's going to do that, you might as well coach.
I think Kirk needs to go ahead and get into broadcasting.
Get into broadcasting? Do you think he'd be a good broadcaster?
I already saw him do it.
We classified Kirk as an exciting white.
He'd be great in the booth.
I'm talking about as a player. Is he an exciting white?
No.
Or is he just
Cooper Kupp?
He's just white.
Yeah, he's just a khaki.
He's just a white.
Cooper Kupp's an exciting white.
Okay. Yeah. I agree. He does. I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, Kirk's just white.
Yeah. All right, next one up here. I have, hold on one second.
To red.
All right, let's do this one. Let's build a lineup.
20, I got 15.
Let's build a lineup. Build your perfect lineup with only $15. Do you want to list off the quarterback row there?
Yes. Let me use my supervision. Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Dan Marino. I tell you who I'm choosing.
Running back, Barry Sanders, Jim Brown, Walter Payton, Emmitt Smith there in the $2 category, and LaDainian Tomlinson in the $1 column.
What do we got at wide receiver, Blaine?
We got Larry Fitz. We got Calvin Johnson, Megatron, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, and Don Hudson.
Don Hudson.
Who did Don Hudson play for? What team?
The Cleveland Steamers.
Come on. Green Bay, baby. Packers. Go, Pack, go.
All right. Also on the wide receiver list, we got Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, Chris Carter, DeAndre Hopkins.
Did you skip that?
I thought it was one.
And then it tied in Tony Gonzalez, Gronk, Antonio Gates, who was an absolute dog, Shannon Sharp, and Jason Witten.
All right. No Travis Kelce up there.
All right. So can I get Patrick Mahomes for $0? Is that how this works? No. Here's what I'll do. For 15, give me Dan Marino at quarterback, because in this era, he'd be an absolute dog. There's no way that I'm not. Give me Dan Marino.
Just do one. Don't do your whole team yet.
I can't do his whole team. He's got to build his roster.
I got to build my roster. I got to remember this. Give me Dan Marino for $1. Give me LT for $1. Yeah. So I've spent $2. Give me Megatron for $4. Give me Randy Moss for $4. How about that cheese, Randy? And so that's $10. And then tied in, give me Tony Gonzalez for $5. Congrats. That's 15. You just lost.
Marino sitting out $1 is impossible not to
do. Well, he also never won a Super Bowl. Look, he was my favorite athlete.
Dan Marino's fault.
Dan Marino, okay, but he was my favorite athlete growing up. I'd love to pick him, but he's the only one up there that never won a Super Bowl.
Okay. So you're taking Drew Brees over Dan Marino?
In this scenario, I mean, I'd spend maybe one more dollar.
You gonna go Peyton?
Look, I don't know. I love Dan Marino. For a buck, you're getting a good deal, right?
I'm sorry. What?
Dan Marino.
Okay, you're going Dan Marino.
Emmitt Smith.
Okay.
That's $3.
Yep.
Okay, give me Randy Moss.
Okay, that's $7.
Give me Calvin Johnson.
That's $11.
And then give me Gronk.
Say it one more time. Who'd you take?
Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Emmitt Smith, Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, and Rob Gronkowski.
Nice.
Yeah. All right.
I couldn't hear you.
Here's the perfect lineup. Peyton Manning for $3. Are you kidding me? I'm going to take him. LT with $1. I like that. A lot of value. Give me Randy Moss for $4. I'm going to take Julio. Was he slightly discourteous to me when I directed him in the Falcons hype video? Yes. But we can put that aside. $3 for Julio. Give me that. And then I'll take Gronk at $4 right at 15. Or honestly, I could just take Antonio Gates and put $1 in my pocket.
You should. You made money in this thing. Yeah, without a doubt. Hey, let us know. Out of this, pick your best team with $15.
I'm mopping y'all.
And let us know.
Were you kidding me? Did you see my roster?
Y'all getting mopped. It might not be close.
I mean, look, I don't know.
I have Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, and Rob Gronkowski. Y'all are cooked.
I got Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson too.
Rob Gronkowski is better than Tony Gonzalez.
No, he's not.
Better than Travis Kelce too.
No, he's not. Gronkowski is not better than Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez is better than Travis Kelce too.
I agree with that, but Rob's better than both of them.
Well, good. Congrats on your down blocking. Good luck.
All right, last one up here. I have some graphics for each SEC team in the last time that they have lost 10 or more games in a single season.
Now with Texas and Oklahoma, is this included?
Okay. Maybe. We'll see when I get there. All right. You tell me the year, the last time they lost 10 or more games.
I've got to guess the year.
Yeah, and we'll see who's the closest.
Do I need to write it down on my board of justice? And
yeah. Hold on. Yeah. Pull out that board.
I got this thing.
Say it again.
Godly. Will you get the fat out of your ears?
I just want to make sure I got it right, guys.
I'm going to hit you with each SEC football team. You tell me the last time they lost 10 or more football games in a single season. We're going to start with Mississippi State.
Okay, 10 or more. God, how many did they lose last year? Let's go.
You have 5 seconds.
Okay.
Look them around.
Hold on. Got it. 2008. Would you?
Oh, sorry.
What year?
I don't know if you can't do that. But second off, it was this past year. So Jake wins.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. I was trying to remember if they lost 10 or 9.
All right, next up, Kentucky. Ooh. When's the last time Kentucky lost 10 or more football games?
Oh, the music.
God, I did too. All right. Kentucky lost 10 or more football games. Not last year. They didn't lose 10 last year. They did. I'm going to be pissed, David.
No, he does it twice.
No, he does it twice. But then he'd totally do it twice. Give me...
Don't say it out loud.
Okay. I got mine. You got yours?
Flip them.
Wait.
Blaine's looking at my board.
Flip them.
I can't look at your board.
This can't take all day. 2009. 2013.
Ha-ha!
Jake, again.
God!
All right, next up, Missouri. When's the last time Missouri lost 10 or more football games in a season?
Give me, I'm going to go... All right, I got it. 1985.
God,
I am on fire.
Show the kid. What'd you get? You had 1995?
I had 1995.
You had 2009? All right, so Jake's
I'm going to write it bigger, too.
All right, Tennessee, the Tennessee Volunteers. How about them?
Tennessee, the last time they lost 10 games? I'm going to say hold on. Oh, that's not right.
Hey, dude, come on.
No.
All right, 1981, and you had 1988, and the answer is never.
Never?
No, 81.
That's a trick question.
No, they're not the only ones on here.
Not the gumdrop buttons.
Never for Tennessee. Tennessee's so proud right now.
No.
Again, all of this is predicated on the Players Lounge graphic that I'm using, by the way.
Okay,
so
good.
If one of these is wrong, blame them, and we'll fact check later. All right, next one up here, LSU, the LSU Tigers. Go Tigers.
Last time they lost 10 games?
Last time they lost 10 games. Jake says 19.
Why are you looking at your computer, bruh?
What'd you say?
Are you looking up the answers?
This man is a cheat. Same guy who threw the hot dog under
2003,
there.
LSU, never.
He did it again.
Never.
God, that team in 73 sucked.
All right, we got to get Blaine to win one here. Next one up. Auburn. Let's stay with the Tiger theme here. Auburn. When's the last time they lost 10 football games in a season?
Auburn? Ooh. Auburn? Ooh. Never.
I feel like I'm in Ace Ventura or something with this music playing.
Not in Ace Ventura.
Blaine wrote never.
You're in some.
Blaine wrote never. Go ahead. Flip it around.
Never?
1950.
Damn it! No! That year doesn't count. It was the Korean War.
1950. How about Alabama? How about the Alabama Crimson Tide?
Are we counting vacated wins?
When's the last time they had double-digit losses in a season?
Now you're just trying to piss me off because I know the answer to this.
You do know?
Yeah. Wait, the way you said that makes me think it's not never.
Blaine says never.
Insane.
It's like I'm in a James Bond movie.
1935.
Answer 1955.
Let's go. Let's go.
1955.
Let's go. God, I hope you're keeping score at home because it's a melting.
I've won one.
How about the Georgia Bulldogs?
Georgia? Last time they lost 10 games?
Yeah.
I All right. Never.
Both of you are correct.
Hey, good.
Never for Georgia.
Good.
How about go a little bit south, Florida? Down to Gainesville, Florida, Florida Gators. 10 games lost in a single season. Lane says 1962.
I'm going to go 1958.
It's 1979.
Let's go, baby.
Lane got that one.
Let's get excited about it.
Nice job, son.
God, what happened in 79?
South Carolina. How about the South Carolina Gamecocks?
Last time they lost 10 games. Ooh, give me... This is just a pure guess.
Blaine says 2008. Jake says 1982. It's 1999.
Let's go.
There you go. Tell me who the head coach was. Who was the head coach of South Carolina?
In 1999?
When they lost those games.
That was our dear friend.
That was.
Good friend of ours. Good friend of the show.
Really?
Sometimes it's not always his voice. But
Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz.
Oh, no
Lou
way.
Lou Holtz.
That team wasn't as tough as their name.
How about Ole Miss? Ooh. Ole Miss. Hottie toddy.
I'm going to go.
10 games or more lost in a season.
Don't show me.
That's what I got.
Jake says 1981. 1985. 2011.
Really? Oh,
2011. Let's go.
It's building
still
it back
not enough.
Up. Building it back
still
up.
Not enough.
Right. How about we'll do two for special here. Texas Longhorns and Texas A&M, because the answer is the same. The answer is the same.
Really?
For both of them. When's the last time both of those teams in the same year lost?
So for Texas and Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. You are, why'd you know this so quick?
Because I know things.
Texas and Texas A&M both.
That was the year this happened. There was something that happened around the globe, too, that affected. I will give you that hint.
Blaine says 1980. Jake says never. Never.
Never.
You fell for it.
Never.
You know what happened around the globe when it happened? Nothing.
Never.
I'll strangle you.
Nothing.
All right, boys. We're almost done. Arkansas. The Arkansas Razorbacks.
Okay. Okay.
What
I'm
going to
go.
God, ten games or more lost in a single season. A lot. 1993. 2019.
Yeah.
Wow.
I win.
2019.
Yeah.
All right. Two more here. The Oklahoma Sooners. When was the last time Oklahoma lost 10 football games in a season?
Yeah, go ahead.
Jake says never.
You said never.
Blaine says 1973. Never.
Never.
Never have.
It's a bloodletting.
Never have. Last one here. Last one. Vanderbilt. When's the last time Vandy lost 10 games? Not this past year. Not with Diego Pavia. At least you went out with a win. 2023.
Okay.
Before Pavia got there.
That's right. In Clark's first year. That's crazy.
All right, I made it respectable.
You did make it respectable.
Hey, well done.
Credit, even
well,
you
that was cool,
much.
David.
David, that was some pretty good trivia.
Well done, boys.
I was shockingly off on more of those than what I thought I would be. But now, from learning about that, you get to learn how to bet the Super Bowl.
Books.
All right, as you know on Crane & Company, we do a lot of betting. It's the Super Bowl. There's going to be a lot of bets. But you think everybody out there understands how to do it and what everything means, and they don't. That's why we had our Betting 101 video that did so well. So now we're going to introduce Super Bowl Betting 101. For your newbies out there, maybe you want to get your feet wet, right? Feel dangerous but also safe. So we just want to explain the basics. If you're an expert, maybe you need a little bit of a refresher course. So we're going to give it to you. And we're going to start with the Chiefs-Eagles matchup and the spread, David Cohn. What is the spread on the game?
Yeah, and again, the three easiest things here that you're always going to see at the top, spread, total, and money line. So if you see spread right now, let's say Kansas City Chiefs minus 1.5, and then under that, minus 110. That means the Chiefs are favored by a point and a half. So walk people through how you put money on that and what it means when you have a spread of minus 1.5.
Yes, and most of the spreads you are going to see, especially in football, are going to have that 0.5 on them, right? We call that the hook. Now, that doesn't mean Kansas City is expected to win 17.5 to 16. That's impossible. But what it does is it kind of separates the bets where one has to hit and one cannot hit. So for example, Kansas City is -1.5, which means they are expected, if you want to bet on the Chiefs to win with that spread, they have to win by 2, not 1, because it's that half. So the Kansas City Chiefs would have to win by 2 if the spread was -1.5. If the Chiefs were -6.5, they would have to win by 7. In betting, minus is the favorite. It's kind of like golf. Minus is good. If you see a plus, like you would see for the Eagles, who are +1.5, yep, they are the underdog, which means that they can still lose, but they have to lose by 1 or less. So if they lose by 2, all right, then you don't hit. If they lose by 3, then you don't hit. But if they lose by 1, because it's under that hook, under that half, and you got it at +1.5, that means you win. So minus favorite, plus is underdog. And then you mentioned, Coney, kind of walk them through before we get to Blaine,
yeah,
what the minus 110 and yeah, the odds are representing.
And again, if you have a minus by your odds, right, you're having to risk more money to win that amount of money. If you have a plus in front of it, that means it's an underdog bet. You get a little more value, but it's more risky. Vegas or the odds makers think that bet is less likely to hit. So let's just take what you said here. Eagles +1.5 on the points, right? We think the Chiefs are at least a point and a hook better than the Eagles are. So the money line on that is +105 Eagles, right? Because they're the underdogs in the game. Hey, I don't want to mess around with the spreads. And a lot of people don't, because the objective is to win a football game, not to cover a spread. So some people just say, I just want to bet on who's going to win the game. So you may be thinking, all right, if I think the Eagles are going to win a game, I might as well take them money line at +105 rather than even taking the extra point and a half I could be offered, because I'm getting better value. Football is a game that usually works in threes and sixes and sevens. I don't even want the point and a half unless the spread were up so high that it was, say, 3.5, which covers you on a field goal on a hook.
That's exactly right. So money line, straight winner, as David Code said. Blaine, let's talk about the over-under, because there's some similarities and some things you're going to look at, but it's also different.
Well, it's somewhat the same way if you look at it when it comes to spreads. The over-under is the total amount of points that are going to be scored in this game. So right now, for doing the Super Bowl, the over-under is at 48.5 points. So you could bet the over, and the over would be they have to score 49 points for you to hit that bet. That's the only way.
Or more.
Or more. 49 or more. If they score anything, if they score 48, you do not hit that bet because of why? It's at 48.5. So anything under 48, if you bet the under and it hits. If it goes over, then you don't hit that. So the total will always be the amount of points that get scored in a football game. That is what the over and under is. And there's also minus bets, and there's also plus bets,
yeah,
when it comes to betting the over-unders. Say right now it came out and it was at 49.5, all right, and it was even money. Then it went to 50.5. And for you to bet that over 50.5, it's +110. So you would actually be betting an underdog, so you would win money. I believe right now the over-under is 48.5, and it's sitting at -110. So on both sides, so I think it's kind of evened out, right?
And if you look at either the spread, which is which team will win by this amount, or the total, which is the over-under, these amount of points will be scored combined, they will not always have the same odds underneath them, like Blaine was mentioning. And whenever you look up, if you look at the let's just use the total at 48.5, and you look and the over is -110 and the under is -110, you take 30 minutes, you go away, you come back and you log back in. Now all of a sudden it's still the same number, right? But the odds underneath the over for 48.5 are -112. And the odds for the under are -110 or 108 or whatever. What does that mean? That means that the money is getting bet heavier on the over to hit. And if enough money gets bet on the over, it will go from 48.5 to 49.5. Mm-hmm. If a lot of people start taking the under, it will go from 48.5 to 47.5. So if you see the odds are different for the over under or even on the spread, that means the money is coming in on that side. But that does not guarantee that that's your best bet or that's a better bet to hit. That means some people are playing one side. And again, some people go with the public, some people go away from the public. So that's another thing as well.
Two more thoughts here. One for the point total over, one for the point total under. A lot of people like to see points get scored in football games, in basketball games, in whatever sport you're talking about. And so because they want to see a lot of points, especially when you get two high-powered offenses out there, they'll bet on the over. Well, like Jake said, that will drive up that line. That's why a lot of times the under is a good play. But another thing to think about when it comes to the under is overtime. You got a close ball game, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, whatever, if it ends up being close and that goes to overtime, unless you went in and specifically got a tie at regulation or something like that, then overtime has a chance to score more points and your under will get busted.
Exactly. And we've talked about the basics, the fundamentals, right? The money line, which is picking the straight winner, Kansas City or the Eagles, straight up, it doesn't matter what the score is. If this team wins, you hit for that amount of the odds. We talked about the total, the over and under, the combined amount of points scored, and then the spread, which team will win by or which team is favored to win by a certain amount of points. But those are your basics. Let's for a second explain to the people what props are. You have player props, you have team props, you have game props. And because it's the Super Bowl, it's one of the most bet things in the sporting world, you basically can bet on anything. A ball to hit the crossbar on a field goal. Somebody to streak on the field. Travis Kelce proposes to Taylor Swift after the game. But we'll go over the basics. Basically, a prop is an individual bet, a player prop to a player. A team prop is an individual bet for a team. You may be saying, but Jake, if I take Kansas City to win by -1.5, that's an individual bet for the team. Yes, technically, but it's not a prop per se. A team prop would be, hey, Kansas City individually as a team, they think their over-under for their team total points is 23.5. So you can bet, forget what the Eagles score, forget who wins the game. You can take a solo bet on how many points just the Chiefs will score, or that Travis Kelce will have over 70, over or under 75 receiving yards. That's a player prop. They're individually based. Not smaller bets monetarily, but kind of more granular bets, whether it's by team or whether it's by player or whether it's by somebody it will score a 2-point.
First touchdown.
Explain that. You can get a prop. You can get a defensive prop where you think this guy's going to get a sack.
Yeah.
You know, there's the amount of props that are out there is absolutely ridiculous. There is a first touchdown betting prop to where whoever you think you can get great odds on this too. This is one of the best bets to get the best odds. Whoever you think is going to score the first touchdown, both teams, whether that's offense, defense, you can guess that person. But when it comes to props, most people bet rushing props, they bet receiving props, and they bet passing props. So right now, for Saquon Barkley's rushing prop for this game, it's at 110.5 yards. All right? So you can either bet the over on that or the under on that. Do you think Saquon Barkley is going to get more than 110 rushing yards? All right, you can go the same thing receiving. Right now, Travis Kelce is slated in his prop to have 60.5 receiving yards. So you can go in and bet, I think Travis is going to get more than that, or I think Travis is going to get less than that. And guys, it's not only the star players of the team. They will have everybody who has a question on whether or not going to catch a pass in there. I mean, you got DeAndre Hopkins, Saquon Barkley, Juju Smith-Schuster. Then you go to passing props, right? And you can do a lot of different things from passing props, from player touchdown passing to completion props. But right now, we're going to go through yardage, all right? So Patrick Mahomes, passing prop is right now at 250.5 yards. And this can change too, all right? People can bet on this, and this line can move. So you would bet whether or not you think Patrick can throw for more than 250 yards in this game. So you can take the over on that, and you can also take the under on that.
Definitely.
One of my favorites is the largest lead over and under. When I think, hey, this game's going to be close, right? I don't think one of these teams is really going to get out with a big lead over the other team. I'll take this, especially in a football game when it's over 14.5. Right now for the Super Bowl, it's at 13.5. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes up. And again, that's a huge difference between 13.5 and 14.5. At 14.5, if you take the under on the largest lead, that means you're protected. If one team goes up on the other by 2 touchdowns, you're still good. But remember, one team goes up on the other by 17 points and the other team comes back and only loses by 3, you still lost that bet.
Yep, and one of my favorite things and kind of the last thing we want to highlight here because this is 101, is the live betting. Let's say that you decided to take the Chiefs -1.5 before the game and it's halfway through the first quarter and the Chiefs are already down 14-0 and maybe you're like, oh man, well now I can't make up for that bet. And again, bet with what you can afford to lose. Be responsible. It's just like anything. Live betting is just as much fun to me as betting before the game. You can literally bet these similar numbers are the similar the props and you know the score, the spread and the totals during the game as the game is going. Almost to the point you brought up the first touchdown score. You can bet who's going to score the next touchdown. You can bet what's going to happen on this drive before the drive starts. Will it be a punt? Will it be a made field goal, a missed field goal, a touchdown, or whatever? So the live betting is even more, you know, in real time. You got to do it fast because the lines will move really, really quickly, especially if you're trying to do it mid-drive. But that's another way to kind of keep the game fun, even if the bets you made earlier aren't hitting.
Yep.
We love live betting. Yeah. All right. Make sure you check out 102. Going to keep giving you the goods. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Bet responsibly. Drink responsibly. And watch sports content responsibly, which means Crane & Cup. All right, guys. Now you are prepared on how to bet the Super Bowl. May have been basic for some, Coney, but they needed to hear it. We need to get the basics.
Had to hear it.
Had to hear it.
Sometimes keep it simple, stupid is what they say.
That's exactly right. So good luck to you. And don't forget, we have the live stream this Sunday, the Super Bowl, Mission Cigar and Social. Be there or be lame. The choice is yours. And like the chances of us not enjoying that live stream with some cigars and some libations and some good company, we're going gone.